Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like Fanatics apparel, not your first choice. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, who's only interested in canoeing if it involves cigars, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Are we having fun yet, Mike? I seem to remember a time when we were having fun doing this.
Like 2 months ago.
Yeah. There's been seven games since our last podcast. The Jets were 3-4 in that time. And this was a group of games, given what the standing are. The Jets are going to need to be like Mike at a urinal, on their toes to maximize the points to maintain a playoff position.
Sorry, I'm joking. You cut that one. We've done a number of these, Vaughn, and that one caught me for a left hook. I was choking on my own laughter there. Well done.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's been a lot of negativity around the Jets lately, and for to a degree, it's been justified. However, people, remember, this is sports. This is only sports. And we don't gauge our self-worth as persons or a community by how our local sports team is doing in the standings.
Fair enough.
So, you know what? Yeah, we'll probably rant a little bit on this podcast. But at the end of the day, it's just entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. So let's have some fun while trying not to be too negative.
All right. In antithesis to that, let's do check-in time. Okay, yeah, as you mentioned, Vaughn, Jets went 3-4 since our last one. And as, again, I feel like a broken record, just a wild roller coaster of highs and lows in this one. And, again, obviously stating the obvious is, you know, given the tightening of the playoff race and giving our precarious position in the wild card spot, obviously each one of these games becomes a little more myopic and a little more under the microscope. And some of these, aw shucks, we played well, but we still didn't get the result we wanted, wins or losses. It has a more of a gravitas, and each one hurts a little more. And some of the old adages of, well, we played the right way, but we just didn't get the result, kind of don't, I think, measure up with a lot of Jets fans, myself included. I do take some solace in that, you know, in some of these games that we lost, statistically anyway, we were probably the better team, and we outshot a lot of opponents and out high danger chanced a lot of opponents and came away the loser. There's second place for beauty prize, right? Like you can't have that level of futility, I guess, if we're speaking directly to our scoring prowess. But again, even yesterday's game, all told, you know, some individual efforts I think might have been lacking, but all told, I think we probably deserved a better outcome. But we lost, and we're inching closer and closer to being on the outside looking in.
Mike, I can support everything that you've said, and I think it's rational. I think it's accurate. It's where the conversation goes from here, and I don't mean between you and me, but I mean out there, in social media or in the community or wherever, that I have more of a problem with. I think people can rightly bring up exactly what you have said and express their, you know, displeasure with the fact that we're not winning games. But it's where it's gone from there that concerns me. It's like, run this guy out of town, run that guy out of town. And for me, the things I'm seeing don't match that. The vitriol that's been spilled out there in a few directions. And yes, I am a Mark Scheifele apologist, and a lot of it is going to him. But, you know, if we look at it, the broader discussion in the community doesn't jive for me what I'm seeing on the ice. I'm not seeing enough. So I don't want to use names at this moment, but what I'm seeing is, you know, the guys that our people are angry with, the Scheifele, the Connors of the world, they haven't been up to their best for sure. But they also, I feel, and especially in the case of Kyle Connor, have been working incredibly hard, and their body language is good. Their effort is good. Yes, you're always going to have defensive breakdowns with Shifley
yeah,
and Connor, and those are getting blown way out of proportion, and we're losing a little bit of the forest for the trees here. Things are getting precarious. I think that we are kind of being burdened with, you know, some false hope that was given to us earlier in the year
with
such the strong start. Like something, one of the questions, I'll burn one of the questions that I had for In-Flight Entertainment. I said, if before the season you were told after 74 games the Jets were going to be 41 wins, 30 losses, and 3 overtime losses for 85 points, does that sound about right? Now, it's the composition and how that is unfolded that I think has people really losing their minds right now. I think we are who we are, and this is who we are, right? I just think things started so well, and there was so much optimism.
Yeah.
And the decline has been so precipitous and so, you know, in contrast to what we saw early in the year, that it's very frustrating for people. And now, you know, the posse is growing, you know, the torches are being lit, you know, the nooses are being fastened, and people are out for it. And it's a little disheartening because, you know, I still think this is a very likable team that unfortunately isn't playing very good hockey right now.
No, and I understood. And I think we're, you know, at the suffering a bit from it's almost double anchoring bias in that the expectations were so low to start the season that their torrid start was, you know, it was doubly appreciated in terms of where they were at after the first 30 games of the season. And then we anchored to that. And then based on the first 30 games, the last 30 or I guess 42 games subsequent to that, have been obviously wildly disappointed. And I like the way you frame that. I do agree that if at the, you know, puck drop in September, if you had said that's going to be our outcome at this point and we're fighting for a wild card spot, I would have been perfectly content. So you're very right to bring up.
We might context. Have said, oh, I think we'll be a little bit better than that. But I don't think either of us would have said, oh, well, we'll be battling for first in the division or first in the conference where they were a number of weeks ago, right? Not even the most optimistic Jets fans would have been prognosticating that prior to the season.
Yep.
So we're definitely within, what's it, the realm of error. What's that called? In statistics,
standard deviation.
Standard deviation. Whatever. We'll edit this out.
New analysis published in the British Medical Journal finds that men are idiots.
Both of us should know that.
I know. We should know that.
So I wanted to. This is. I'm going to burn up one of my questions as well. And Vaughn, I'm going to give you. I'm going to step aside and let you take shots at me if need be, because I penned an article, and I will have to admit some of the vitriol that you're discussing I have contributed to publicly, in that I wrote an article and I questioned sort of, and there's been a number of them. Scott Billick did one for the Sun. Mm-hmm. You know, Murat did it in his usual classy way, more so as a, hey, you know, what's going on with the Jets core at sort of the word du jour in terms of contributions and productions heading into this playoff push. And, you know, I took it probably a step further and singled out Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, in that historically they have been our leaders for about a decade, and time and again, and I hope I wasn't anyway, I wasn't questioning their production necessarily, but just some of the intangibles in terms of their ability to lead from a player perspective. And I was coming at it as, if 10 years is a long enough sample size, that if the continual output is, geez, that was a bit disappointing, then maybe it is time for a change. And I know you've said on this podcast, and I agreed with you, that, you know, Mark Scheifele should be a Winnipeg Jet for as long as he plays NHL hockey. And, you know, I posited essentially, is that a good thing? Is that something that is going to push us over the, you know, the sort of the Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the mountain? Are we just going to keep doing that repeatedly in perpetuity? So, you were suspiciously quiet on your end. And so now is obviously a time to disagree if you think my postulation was incorrect or a bit capricious.
Well, I mean, as I've said many times, I'm a Mark Scheifele apologist, and I think it's very fair to posit whether the leadership on this team is good enough to you know, steer the ship in the right direction when the seas are stormy. You know, you need the right captain to sail you through the storm, and I'm not sure. I think there's credible evidence to question whether we have that leadership or not. But this is my problem with the current narrative, is that it started the moment that Scheifele wouldn't talk to the media after a game.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so if there's one thing, like, you know, if there's one thing the media is going to push back on, it's when you cut off their access, right? Because I'm sure they hold many secrets. They don't print certain things that they come across or hear on the road when they're around the team. And all they ask in return, quote unquote, is for our leadership to step up and deal with the media. And there could be a huge range of issues as to why, you know, part of being an assistant captain and a captain is stepping up and dealing with the media. I absolutely acknowledge that. And at times, Mark Scheifele hasn't lived up to that. There's a lot of other, probably more important aspects of being a captain that perhaps he does very well. We don't know. He could also do those things poorly. You know, I think my concern is that's when this narrative started. Right. As soon as he said, I'm not going to talk to the media after the game. Like, we don't know. Like, you know, being an athlete in any market is a tough job. And we all preach about, you know, mental health and all these types of things. Guy wants, just doesn't want to deal with the media one night. And all of a sudden it's like they're hounds to a carcass and ripping it to shreds. Right. So that's this didn't materialize out of seemingly organically. Right. It's a reaction to not being made, not putting himself in front of the media. And to me, that's not a good basis, because there's plenty of other guys on this team that aren't getting treated the same way. Now, you can look at that as maybe they've been given the green light internally. Maybe Scott Brown, not to drag his name into it. Maybe they give, you know, internally, like, say, hey, gloves are off. He doesn't want to meet with you. You can write whatever you want about him. Maybe they're not happy with him either, right?
Never thought about that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, I think people are, you know, when people are emotional and they're angry and you fuel those two things together, there's not a lot of, you know, rational sort of analysis stemming from that in the short term. And I've seen and try to look at as many different measures out there, and most of them that surround Scheifele this year are pretty darn good. Yes, he loses a faceoff. He's not great in the faceoff circle, and there will be lapses in the defense.
No, and nor has he ever been. That's never been
his
calling card.
Nor has he ever been.
I disagree with that. I agree.
And the tough thing is, when it dries up in the offensive zone, that's all you're left with, right? Is a guy that can't win the first draw on the power play. And, you know, like, I mean, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the dichotomy between what's happening on the penalty kill and the power play. Like, if we'd had any type of decent power play over the last 10 games.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, that's question number two we're going to burn. Good.
Yeah, we're pulling out, you know, maybe things are different in St. Louis, where we go a 0-for-3 on the power play. We go 0-for-5 in Boston, a game I thought we played pretty darn well.
And I thought we could have won if, you know, bounces, and I had that written down, the power play. If we were able to convert, would have been a totally different game, I think.
Yes, and I mean, it's just, I think we're looking at things here, the line between winning and losing is so narrow. And we lived on the other side of that line.
We sure did.
The shooting percentage, the save percentage that pushed us on the other side for a long time. And now we're on the other side where just a goal here or there can influence the game, the trajectory of the game. The LA game was a perfect example of just don't get behind this team early. Boom. 33 seconds into the game or whatever. And we're behind a team where that's the game plan. It's always the game plan to score first. But if there's a team you don't want to let just sit back. It's specifically them.
Yeah.
And, I am kind of changing the channel from the narrative around some of the players to a different direction that we'll get into in the pre-boarding announcements. But, for me, I do think that I'd echo a lot of what you said. There's been a lot of good play. There's been some tough luck in there. There's been, a power play that's just looked horrible. And we can discuss some of the reasons behind that. But, for me, things aren't as bad as they seem. We're about where we should be. This team is what it is. And I think the long-term inferences over where the we're going to blow up the team and everyone's not back and everyone's leaving ship. It's like, what's it like on all these other teams? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Every team in the league, everyone's leaving every team for every reason that's at the Jets level and below. I don't think there's anything going on with the Jets that's any different than any other team in the league that's at or below their level.
Yeah, and, the seven games, I thought the first one of those, the Carolina game, was probably like the only one where I was like, well, that we definitely deserve to lose there, and I didn't think it was a entirely solid effort. The remainder of them, I thought at various stages of the games and throughout that, as simple as it sounds, but if our power play hadn't gone 1-for-21 and Connor Hellebuck wasn't below average to average, because whatever we're saying about the Jets is we come and go as Connor Hellebuck goes, and if he's average to below average, we're going to have a really tough time winning. But that's been the case for 5-6 years. None of that has changed. It's just he's typically better than he's been recently, outside of a few outlier games.
Since the Florida games, this Jets save percentage, and most of this has been Hellebuck, maybe not every game. It's been starting with the Carolina game, it was 800, then 875, then 900, 824, 933 against Arizona, which was good.
Great game,
900 and 862.
Not great, Bob.
That's not Vezina numbers. Nope. It just isn't. That's like, those are Rittich type numbers, and we need Hellebuck to play more like Hellebuck and less like Rittich. As average as he's been when he's been in there, he's been a backup goalie. And it's the disconnect between the things I'm seeing that have been causing the Jets problems and many of which we've talked about at length on this podcast and the things I'm seeing on social media. Not that I care about social media, but it does reflect the broader mood. And if the Jets are worthy to be criticized, let's criticize them for the right reasons and not, this is just the next opportunity we have to get mad at Connor and Shifley and boy, that Wheeler's great. He's such a
well, that is Bradley the other Cooper side of the coin looking, here, is that, the selective benching of Connor and Shifley is dubious to me in terms of reasoning, because if you're going to send that message, send it universally, because I know you and I have talked about this in front of a microphone behind it.
Neither of us had concern with the specifics of that specific benching at that time.
No, absolutely.
It's that criteria used to make that decision is not applied against some people.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And just the last point that I have on it is whatever the intended effect of that benching, I think, just objectively, I think we can say that it didn't have the intended result, because since then, again, just production, but Shifley hasn't scored. He's got 2 assists and I think he's minus 13 in the last 8, and he's, in 3 of the 8 games, he hasn't had a shot on net. Now I know, you know, my article aside, Mark Scheifele is extremely talented and almost asleep he can get two or three shots a game. Just the product of him being on the ice and his inherent talent. And I don't want to read tea leaves and speculate far into matters that I shouldn't be speculating on, but I think it's had the opposite effect. I think if I was guessing that Mark is upset, where he's like, how come I got called out?
Yeah.
When the play of others that I know has not been as good as mine over the year. And now I have to go in front of the media and do a mea culpa. No, thanks. I don't want to do that. And if you think my effort isn't meeting up to your standards, watch this. Again, that is pure speculation on my part, but it's not out of the realm of possibility because there has been a significant, just from an eye test, a significant investment decrease, I think, in Scheifele's play, and I attribute it to that. I think I'm out on this. Quit calling me out.
Something we don't do a lot on this podcast is disagree with each other. I'm going to disagree with you on I can't dispute the outcomes, the production. It has not been there. But I think the effort has been. I watch him very closely. He's not floating around. There is float to his game. But it's not.
No, that's fair.
It's not endemic. He is out there. And Kyle Connor, I will also note, those guys are working hard. They're not getting it done. I'm not saying they're not without there's no reason to be critical. They're paid to score. They're not scoring, right? So what are they're doing? But I see the effort in their game almost every shift. And again, they're not perfect. They're going to lose a mark in the defensive zone every once in a while. It's just who they are. But I think your theory is really solid in that, you know, someone like, I don't know how, I'm sure he's a tremendously mature person, but he's probably also has an ego, Mark Scheifele, and he probably has a lot of pride in what he does.
Yeah,
and he probably doesn't like to be singled out. I mean, he's the original son of this franchise. And if you took a look at who they seem to be favoring in terms of line mates throughout the course of the season, PLD's been getting the cream of the crop guys for the vast majority of the season, mostly meaning he hasn't had to play with Wheeler all year. and I mean, he's been as stinkworthy as that's a word, stinkworthy. Scheifele since the Montreal game. What is it? They had what do they call it? The week off, the spring break.
Right. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he hasn't been holding his end either. But we haven't seen PLD get benched. We haven't seen him put down with fourth line guys often.
And his effort has been questionable. Absolutely. At times over this stint as well. The last couple games, I've watched him intently, and especially on the defensive end, some of the tendencies from last year have creeped back into his game. Like there's a very selective effort curve on his part, and it hasn't gone unnoticed. But you know, to your point, I think is that he didn't get benched.
Yeah. So you know, a couple of those guys just get more ice time. Look, I'm going to say two quick things about Blake Wheeler, and then I don't know if we
want
we can move on to Whack Mac. But first of all, he is a Jets legend.
Yes.
I'm going to repeat this as many times as I can.
We're talking
about Blake Wheeler right now and his play on the ice.
Yep.
I've been told by numerous people all the things he's done in the community. A good friend of mine who has a family member works for the Jets. He was telling me a story about, someone's, young, nephew who is really sick. Blake reached out to him just on his own time, a phone call. And apparently he does things like that all the time. He's a Jets legend. He's an elite player. His name should be in the rafters. But we're talking about not just Blake Wheeler, but how an organization is not putting him in a position to be successful himself, right? And this is undermining him, I think, his legacy here in the city. Right this year, Blake Wheeler has played just over 1,125 minutes five-on-five. 163 forwards have played 1,125 or more minutes. Of that 163, Blake Wheeler ranks 95th in points, 129th in goals, and 73rd in first assists. Okay, so that's no longer elite. Okay, and there are people on this list, like Adam Lowry's on that list. He's played more than – that is not just top six people. That is any forward that has played 1,125 minutes. He's not in the top half of that group. Then I take a look at his power play time. He's played 185 minutes on the power play. 97 forwards in the NHL have played – only 97 forwards have played more than Blake Wheeler on the power play. And he's 81st out of 97 on power play points. So, you know, we saw an exchange. It was a very interesting exchange between Bob Irving and Brent Bellamy, one of my favorite Twitter follows, who's an architect. And as a hockey fan, you can say he's a great architect.
You know, I always wanted to pretend that I was an architect.
But he was. They were kind of going back and forth on Blake Wheeler and man, there's a lot of love for that guy, and it's well deserved. But I think that you can say both things, that this guy is a legend, and I think that he's not performing in a top six role. He's been given. Regardless, I mean, he looks like an old man out there. He lost the puck again. I felt sorry for him.
I felt bad for him on that one play where he was searching around for lost keys or contacts.
Exactly.
It was sad.
It was sad. And, I don't want to say – it's too much to say he's quickly becoming a meme, but that's my concern. Something will happen, and he'll be this meme for a period of time that is not flattering for him. So I think, as we've said many times, we need to do a better job of putting him and other people in a position to be successful. And it's this you know, misappropriation of accountability that is doing, I don't think, the Jets, you know, and I'll get to it a little bit more in the penalty box because I got a good joke for there. But, do you want to move on to Whack to Mac and just
– Let's do it. Mac to Whack Continuum. All right, kick us off, Vaughn.
Well, as we all know, the whack to Mac continuum starts at 1 and goes to 10. And, you know, I got to give this a 2. It's nearly totally whack. Although 3 and 4 might suggest something a little closer to in the middle. Just for me, they continue to get, they're winning despite themselves. At this stage, they continue to get in their own way. The constant reworking of the lines and the power play units has created match confusion and complete discord. They're searching. They have no tools to solve problems, and they're just changing things, hoping for magic to appear at some point. Faith is not a method, as I've been told, and that's all I'm seeing here is just throwing stuff at the wall, hoping something will stick. And that's not an informed way to do things. So I'm giving it a 2.0, nearly totally whack. How about you, Mike?
Oof, I can't believe it. For once, I think I'm higher, but only marginally. I had it at a 3. And I, again, for the reasons we've already elucidated, I thought there were some, I thought the Predators game, although a low event hockey game, I thought we played pretty decently. I mean, the Ducks are terrible, and so we probably should have. They're just a terrible hockey team, and so we probably should have paced them even further. But we had a shooting percentage of 10%, which is sufficient. But we've been lower than that throughout these last 7 games. And again, it's just like our shooting percentage is below 10%, which is where you want to be. Our goals against, as you referenced, is below where it needs to be, and you can't score on the power play. Very few teams are going to win that way. So at the end of the day, it's disappointing, but I want to sort of maintain a sliver of optimism, in a very Mike Guthrie way. But I did like some parts of the slate here, albeit we didn't advance our chances of making the playoffs all that well.
No.
All right.
So let's take a look at some pre-boarding announcements. Let's go there.
Let's
get to first class and penalty box and see what we like to have on an individual level.
All right. Let's kick us off at first class.
Okay, our first-class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first-class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I'm going to be short. It's Josh Morrissey.
Oh,
I think while his production has dipped, he's still quite obviously battling and still battling through some injuries. The fight is still there. The quality is still there. I think we're seeing now, like, even on a bit of a downslide to his season, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And we've seen Josh Morrissey transformed into the defenseman I think we're going to see years to come. He's got that stuff with his family and his dad, and the unfortunate passing of his dad behind him,
yep,
which seemed to affect his play. I think now there's a body of work that says Josh Morrissey has arrived, and I think he's shown everything to be the next captain and leader of the Winnipeg Jets. So for that, not only his battling through stuff lately, but his whole season, I'm putting him in first class. I don't think I've had him in first class this year.
No, so, I can't recall if he had. And maybe he'd get some a nurse up there to mend the whatever it is, 15 stitches he got in his goodness face from taking a cross check from that douchebag. Anyway, you'll never get an argument from me on his assignment in first class, and that was well said. I'm going to go Adam Lowry.
Oh, okay.
You know, I thought in respect to the seven games, he had, I think he was one of the, I think he had about 6 points. He had two game-winning goals. I'm not a huge Appleton fan in terms of his contributions, but Lowry seems to play well with him. They seem to have a chemistry that I can't quite put my finger on. And obviously he's, I think, I've said it before, but his contributions on the PK make it, him and Colin Hellebuck make that PK one of the best in the league. And I just think in terms of third line centers, you could still do a lot worse. Like, I know he had, you know, 16, 17 and 17, 18. He was, you know, statistically anyway, just right at the top of the league. But, you know, you look around at guys like Coyle in Boston and Paul in Tampa Bay and Eller, like, he really is still one of the better ones. The offensive production has dried up a bit, but he's still very solid defensively, and he leads the Jets in all the intangible metrics in terms of hits and block shots and fights. So, I, you know, to me, given that we were shut out twice in seven games, so there aren't a lot of offensive players to promote to first class, I thought I'd give it to him.
Yeah, I think he stepped his play up as of late, for sure. You know, the goal scoring in the last few games has helped.
Yeah.
I think he plays best with Barron. I think they're a good combo as well.
And why he's not playing with Barron all the time.
Exactly. It's we finally find two guys that work together, and then we separate them.
Yeah.
Like,
what?
You know, we do something to solve a problem. Well, Barron's going to help our fourth line. Well, sure, yeah, the fourth line will play better, but you're making the third line quite a bit more worse than you're helping the fourth line. And, you know, so that's been, I think he's, when he struggled, it's been a little bit of, he draws a tough assignment every night, and he's had, you know, interchanging partners on his line.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, you know, that could be partly attributable to any, you know, statistical, you know, downside to his play this year. So, yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Right. Okay. Penalty box.
Okay, the penalty box brought to you by the personal injury law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Through your aches and pains, we'll get you monetary gains. Call us at 1-800-BARRATRY. That's 1-800-BARRATRY.
I love that you spell it out. It's awesome.
Your
commitment
to
these fake sponsors, Vaughn, is exemplary. I'm proud of you.
I know. They're worth every penny we don't get. I want someone to Google it. There's a good joke in there.
So I should solicit.
They teach you in law school.
Well, they didn't teach me how to chase ambulances.
Well, you better learn quick. You're going to starve.
Anyways, so for me, this may, you know, delve into, you know, rant, but I'm going to put Coach Bones in the penalty
there
box.
You go.
And, you know, I don't, as I've said before, I don't think he and his staff do enough to put the players in a position to be successful. And I'm, to be honest, I was uncomfortable with the way he seemed to shame his players in the media. I don't think that makes for good accountability. I think that undermines trust, and those things are, I mean, trust is the currency in which, you know, relationships are built. Ooh, you know, in a locker room. You know, it was super passive aggressive, and I felt like the players were being thrown under the bus. I mean, that wouldn't be acceptable. I'm a volunteer university football coach, and it wouldn't be acceptable for me to do it. So I don't know why or I mean, it could suggest he's just simply at the end of his rope and has no other card to play. Well, then, if that's the case, he didn't have enough cards in his deck when he showed up.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, the constant line shuffling, the accountability for some and not others, and the boring and ineffective style of hockey have also fed into this. You know, and let's focus for a moment on the line shuffling amongst the top six. It worked for a period of time, but there were longer-term unintended consequences. I'm sure all the guys and girls down at the Tiki Torch Factory were super pumped when they got that big order from Charlottesville. It had a great short-term bump on sales. But a little later on down the road, the unintended consequence of the order became apparent. The Tiki Torch had suddenly become a symbol of hate and intolerance. Too far?
Again, curveball. If you thought Charlottesville and Tiki Torches would have brought up Jet's analysis, wow. You spun a web there. Both are
burning down in flames.
Well, I have to admit, it's a good pick. I got to gather my thoughts here. But it is, you're right. Like, Connor, I know Perfetti coming out of the lineup somewhat messes, but that's what good coaches do. You adapt. You know, you're like, you got to be like water. And, you know, I know that Ehlers, Connor, and Dubois? Was that the line that?
Yeah, that was the line that dominated for like four games. Like, oh, no, don't do that anymore.
We're good. We're not going to try that anymore. And I just, Vaughn, you played higher level hockey than I did. But I know in my small modicum of hockey world, I hated that. I liked playing with the guys, you know, like, again, not to my own detriment. I could usually recognize who I was effective with and who I wasn't. And these guys are obviously professional athletes. I just can't imagine that is a good workplace where every time you show up to work, you're like, well, we've put everything in a blender and we're going to try something completely new. Oh, by the way, you have 20 minutes to figure it out. Otherwise, I'm going to change it on you again. I've never understood that as a means of coaching hockey. I think that, you know, guys are going to have bad games. Lions are going to have bad games. But on the balance of probabilities, it's a mathematical probability problem. What's best for the team? And let's stick, if this line gives us a 60% chance to win, even if they have a bad game, keep playing them. So I couldn't agree with you more on that one.
Yeah. Who do you got? Are you putting Coach Bones in as well, or do you have someone else?
I had Coach Bones again. So
okay.
Yeah, we're good because it's something where I think, much like we were talking about earlier, in terms of how elated we were with the vibes and the sort of the outcome of the first 30 games, I think both in you and I, it's not being disingenuous to say we weren't sure how good of an X and O guy he was. Like, I think the book on him was like, he's gonna set some responsibilities. He's going to keep the game simple defensively. And he's a good guy in the locker room and is good with the players. But I think that has run out. I think that the initial emotional boost, whatever you want to call it, has now faded. And now it's time for some real coaching. And I'm not sure he is equipped in a modern age of hockey to do that.
100%.
Yeah.
100% agree with you. I think we also talked about before the season, we had heard that Scott O'Neill had done some good work. I think it was in Washington on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
And we're bearing the fruits of that. And I don't think, if I understand correctly, it's not Scott O'Neill, it's Brad Lauer that does the power play. And I know he's had some back health issues and he's been in and out of the day-to-day. But, you know, whatever they're trying with, I mean, it's the tale of two worlds, right? They have an identity and they've been consistent with their people on the penalty kill, and it's proved dividends. Every other place where they've, you know, moved people around, you know, frequently and for little reason, like little things on the power play, they're having trouble getting, you know, zone entries.
Right.
So for a couple games, they put Ehlers on the first power play. They start getting zone entries, and then he's gone.
Yeah, so it's so frustrating. Again, and then he's just they didn't off score.
Power play one.
Like they didn't. They like the end result. They didn't score. Like there was there was. I think I counted three or four. But you're absolutely 1,000% correct. We were getting in the zone with much more regularity than we were before. We'd solve that problem. The next problem was obviously setting up your system and getting going. But we just pulled the plug. It's like, oh, we didn't score, so that doesn't work. Try something else. Yeah. Either your second power play again. Drives me nuts.
And the reason I bring up those two things is how I think there's a stronger connection between coaching and outcomes on the two special teams than there is on the five-on-five, where it's there's a lot more flow to the game. There's a lot less structure, right? It's an end-to-end back of things. So I think that coaching can have a stronger impact on those two. Therefore, when they're successful, you can probably point to coaching as a bigger determinant of power play and penalty-killing success or failure than you can five-on-five. So I think the coaching staff play a larger role in those two things.
No, I agree. Should we go to some in-flight entertainment?
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Let's do so.
All right. Well, I know. Well, we've already covered about two of the topics I wanted to cover, but maybe I'll start us off. We'll lighten the mood a bit, and this is just sort of silly. You know, on our Airport Lounge account, we put out a "What is the best Winnipeg Jets logo?" And you and I both weighed in individually, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the results, because the 90s Temu version, actually, in terms of first and second place votes, and thank you to anyone who's listening who contributed, because we got more contributions than I had ever imagined. Yeah. It was quite awesome. But I was a bit taken aback. Two things. That the Jets 2.0 logo got as much, at least, first place love. It got more than I thought. Yeah. And that the 90s logo kind of dominated at the end of the day, and I was a bit surprised. I thought the Heritage logo would have taken it.
Yeah, I think two things quickly come to mind. I think that like the nostalgia for the 90s logo, the Temu logo, people remember those times more fondly than they actually might have been, and the fact that the Jets came back, I think, helps make those memories a little bit better than they might have been experienced at the time. And, you know, obviously the symbol of the Jets' return, which was, you know, unexpected and cathartic and all of those types of things. I think there's a strong emotional attachment to those two things. I think some of the older ones that I liked a lot, they're just a little too far in the past. Not enough people will have had a connection with those.
That's fair, yeah.
And some of them were a little bit more the boutique ones. Like I love both the South Asian one and the Indigenous one.
Me too.
In fact, I went to pick up a Connor bobblehead the other day. I went to the Jet store as I was on vacation last week.
Good for you.
And I was looking at you know, I love the new jerseys, but it's going to be tough for me the next jersey I get not to be either the South Asian or the I think it's going to be the Indigenous one. They're just phenomenal.
They really are. They're nice.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. They're absolutely beautiful.
I got a hoodie and it's gorgeous.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're just utterly beautiful. So, but they haven't had enough. They haven't been around long enough, right? To really get absorbed into the broader,
yeah, garner that reaction, yeah.
So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. But it was great to have the connection out there. I think there was, you know, thousands and thousands of view of that of your original tweet, and we got a very good response rate in that, and we hope it was, you know, at least for a few moments, something that people enjoyed about the Jets, as opposed to, say, watching the game.
Well said.
All right. So I have a bunch of questions for you. We've covered one.
Okay.
Which was the Jets' current record. And we kind of agreed that, hey, if we were told that before this season, we would have been believed it and probably been okay with it. Okay. So, you know, from that, we'll go to a really, really easy one. Do you think the Jets make the playoffs?
I do. I think they have a schedule. Again, I haven't looked at the strength of schedule in the last week or so. But, you know, obviously we've got games against Detroit and
a couple against San Jose.
I think there's enough fodder there to get us over the hump. And fortunately, I think for us, both Nashville and Calgary are maybe not struggling to the same extent we are, but, you know, Nashville, for one, was a selling team. So the fact that they're still in this is a bit perplexing to me. And Calgary's struggles are sort of well known as well. So, you know, as obvious as this sounds, it's all going to come down to the games left that we have with them, because obviously those are huge, huge swings. And it's all going to rest on those. But if I was to bet right now, I would put us over the 50% mark of making it.
I don't have a good feeling. I don't want to be that guy. Be like, man, we're not going to make the playoffs. But I'll be honest. The human brain can only take, you know, this level of frustration for so long. I'm not suggesting the Jets will quit, but I'm saying it's an enormous amount of talent that isn't doing what they've done easily all their life. I can't quite make of it what I should, in the sense that my gut tells me they're doing exactly what the coaches want them, but they're being told to do the wrong things. It's the only thing that would explain, because players of this talent are not just off like this for this amount of time. So we'll see. Hopefully they can get the floodgates going a little bit. Hopefully they can open up their play. I mean, I think they've tried to really buckle down and play more defensively, and I think that's really choked off their creative juices. And we'll see. But I'm concerned they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would be lying if I said that I had any sort of inherent confidence in this. I just, in terms of, you know, Nashville's got a really difficult strength of schedule. And Calgary, I think, you know, to me, it comes down to that game. And I think if we could win that game, then we have a really good shot. But your concerns are valid and very warranted, because my opinion on that fluctuates game to game. You know, after the Arizona and Ducks win, I was like, okay, well, I think we got this. And then losing to the Kings, which I kind of anticipated we would. Again, I'm more on the skeptical side, but you're right. Well, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
Okay, so building on that, I'm going to jump in with my next question.
Okay.
If the playoffs started tomorrow, by my calculation, the Jets would play the Golden Knights.
They sure would.
Do you think the Jets could win that series?
No.
No, no. I'm going to rephrase it. I'm going to reemphasize. Do you think the Jets could win that series?
Oh.
Not would you, okay, would you take the Jets to
win
the
series? All right, fair. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I don't the Golden Knights are good. I mean,
they're not. They're no great shakes, though.
Who's their goalie?
Yeah, exactly.
If Hellebuck gets hot and we, like, they're a better team than the Jets, but I question their goalie. And they've had injury. I think it's doable. I wouldn't bet on it.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
I wouldn't call the Jets the favorite.
No.
But could the Jets rise up and take the Golden Knights in that series? Absolutely. I absolutely believe they could.
Honestly, we touched on this last time, but the only two teams that I'm legitimately scared of are Colorado and the Oilers.
Yeah,
if we play anybody else, I'm not counting out our chances. Like, again, I think we would be an underdog in a lot of matchups, but yeah, those are the only two matchups that I think. We've touched on this, but we don't handle high end talent very well. No. Like Edmonton, the Connor McDavids and Draisaitls and the McKinnons, they just have their way, and we can shut them down in fits and spurts. But they're predominantly gonna win, and the rest of these teams don't, in my opinion anyway, don't have that high level of talent, at least to that extent. And I give us, you know, a fighter's chance anyway.
Yeah, I agree. What do you got?
Okay, now so Sonny Milano. And he is a guy that was available in free agency for quite some time going into the start of the season. And, like, I get it. I'm not a GM. You're not a GM. Nobody on Twitter is a GM. But he is a guy that I think we identified, or a lot of folks identified, as a really good free agent pickup. Now, playing for the Winnipeg Jets is not a slam dunk proposition. Lots of people just say, no, I'll sign somewhere for less, because
right,
I don't want to play in Winnipeg. So I have no idea if that was in play here. But, you know, obviously, like, he signed a long-term contract. He has been a revelation to a certain extent. And I'm just wondering, that was my question. Like, do you think our inability to get these free agents is a lack of advanced statistical scouting? Or would you lean more towards, we're just not going to get a lot of these guys because no one wants to play out the back end of their career in Winnipeg, Manitoba?
I think that in this particular case, I have a bit of a theory here, because I was quite surprised when Anaheim cut him loose or they traded him or whatever. Yeah. He seemed to be building a pretty good partnership with Zegras there. And Zegras is very much an up-and-coming star. So that led me to believe that maybe he wasn't a great influence on Zegras. And maybe there were things that he didn't do well. They could be nightlife things. They could be he doesn't like to stretch after the game. Or, you know, like he doesn't do the right things is where I'm going with that. And I wonder if the Jets – and I think that the teams that can take a flyer on a guy like that will have had someone on their team that played with him. He's in his he has his number in his phone kind of thing. Like they're buddies. Like, no, he's really looking for another chance. If he comes here, I can keep him straight. He goes to that type of team. And if Winnipeg doesn't have a guy on their team that has connections to him, something like that. I think my bit of a theory was in that case, there was some concern over, because it didn't make sense why a bottom end team would just let him go for next to nothing. I don't recall if he was leased or traded away or whatever the case may be.
They just let him go, is my understanding.
He seemed to be persona non grata for a while.
Yeah.
And far too good of a player to kind of go through the process, that is my recollection, that he ended up going through. Now, to your broader question, I think it's going to be different for every person. And I think that
I knew you'd do the logical answer.
Yeah. But the thing is you're not wrong to ask the question because, perception is reality, but it's not always the truth. The truth is there's nothing wrong with playing in Winnipeg.
Right.
But that's not the perception.
Yeah, fair.
And the reality is these guys feel they need to shit on a couple markets. They need to have five teams that they're going to put on their no trade clause. They need to have a certain energy about certain places. Of course I would play for New York. No way I would ever play for Winnipeg. You know, that's what they feel they need to be. That's their you know, the typical belief system within the NHL community, I think. And no, I don't necessarily think that there's no obvious sign that we're not. Well, I should say when Paul Maurice was here, he sure seemed to like to sign shitty old forwards, but
sure did.
That could, exactly. So is that all the people in the pro player side saying to sign these guys, or are they saying, hey, let's sign these three guys. And Paul Maurice goes, no, get me that guy over there. It's hard to say. It sure seemed like it was Paul Maurice driving the bus.
That's my lane.
But so it's tough to say. I think it's a pretty fluid reality in trying to get people in. There's as many, you know, what's the old saying? Excuses are like assholes. Everyone has one. So everyone has an opinion. So
no, nope, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well said.
So knowing the Jets, like we know the Jets, not like in whatever fantasy world that most people live in, but knowing the Jets like we know the Jets, if the Jets miss the playoffs, what do you think the most realistic and probable approach they will take to the roster for next year?
I think they will run it back. I think that they'll give it another go. What will happen at this time next year is, quite honestly, is a mystery to me because, you know, again, I've touched on this, is that if they're in a similar position next year, it's a whole different ballgame. Because
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
You can't trade away draft picks and prospects if your top two centermen, your Vezina goalie, and, you know, your former captain are all gone. I mean, to me, it's almost at the point where it's a full, not a full rebuild, but like if you haven't landed your UFAs by that stage, then it's time to sort of get something of value for the assets that you currently hold. But I think I'm very confident that regardless of playoffs or not, that we're going to come back and run this back again. That would be, I would be surprised if we didn't.
100% agree. The people like the blow it up crowd, it's just not going to happen.
It won't, no.
Whether it should happen, I don't think it should happen. I think that's the nuclear option. We're not quite there yet. But, you know, the keyboard warriors are just, you know, which is kind of bothering me about the whole discourse around the Jets right now. It's It's a lot of people that are taking positions that are just so not realistic and so not in line with how we know the Jets operate, and they're posturing, and it's just coming off to me as stupidity. I would do this if no, you wouldn't. You'd be a scared little something or other. Like
the one thing I will say is that I was taken aback that in one of the post deadline, I think this is John Liu again. One of the conversations he was having, Cheveldayoff basically flat out came out and said he was asked a direct question and said, "No, I haven't had any conversations with any of our UFAs."
Yeah,
and. I don't know the mechanics or, you know, even some of the legalities in between when and when you cannot have these conversations. And obviously I understand the priority at the time is the season at hand, but it just seemed to me that nothing, or, you know, again, it might be just a good cover. They might have lots of dialogue and he's not going to come out and
Mike,
and let other people speculate what that dialogue might be.
Why would he say he's talked to someone? The minute is like, yeah, I've talked to you guys. Well, everyone. Oh, but then if you're an agent and you know that Cheveldayoff hasn't talked to you and you represent player X, but now he's saying he's talked to a few guys, you're calling him up and you're saying, oh, obviously you don't value my client. Right.
Yeah.
There's no upside for him to tell the truth. Like, and this is coming from for at least from my perspective, an Elliot Friedman comment that the Jets are going to be, once again, you know, the big media are saying the Jets are going to be the team to watch in the offseason because there's going to be so many changes. They're pushing for it. They're trying to create the story. I have no problem with the media. They're doing their job. Their job is to create interest around the sport so they can sell advertising, right? That's what they're doing. They're not benevolent. They're a profit-seeking organization.
No, yeah, it's fair. It's
like anyone else. They're not lying, right? But if they're going to, like, just think of what Elliot said there. You know, the Jets will be an interesting team to watch. Now, they're trying to generate a little heat where there's
no and he
heat.
Knows what he's saying there.
And he knows what he's saying. And they're trying to push a story, push a narrative so that maybe something will come of it. Because all they want to do is have trade deadline day every single day of the year. And I don't necessarily, and he's probably the most credible sports journalist in Canada, probably, if not
top
three
agree.
Or five, you know, but that's his job, is to create heat and energy and around the game of hockey. So you're going to say stuff and you're going to suggest stuff, and it's sports. It's not real life. You know, it is for the athletes, but in the sense that it's not going to create a war, right? It's not global politics. A company isn't going to, the market capitalization of a company isn't going to go into the tank because you said a little thing here or there.
No, and fair.
People do that anyways. It's sports. So why not be a little bit bold on some of the things you say?
I guess I would ask you then, and I'm going to sort of refrain from comment, I guess, to a certain degree. But, you know, if you're looking at the landscape, like, again, and I'm doing to you exactly what you're properly chastising. But at the end of the day, like, to me, I look at it and, you know, let's take PLD, Hellebuck, Wheeler, and Shifley. And I think we agree that there is a dwindling and very small chance that PLD signs here long term. We don't know that definitively.
That. Yeah,
Hellebuck
yeah.
is a wild card. I have no idea. Wheeler is as well, and even Shifley to a certain extent, because, you know, no one knows what his intentions are. But let's say it comes down to, okay, well, Wheeler's going to sign for 3 years, $3 million. We're going to sign Shifley to an $8.5 million for 7 years. And Hellebuck, you're going to get $7.5 for another four. If that was sort of the end outcome midway through next year, would you be happy?
No, because Wheeler's older than we remember, right? He went to college. He's, I think, 38 years old.
He's not signing anymore.
He's got a year on his contract. In all honesty, he's got a year on his contract after this year. I wouldn't be shocked if he retired a year early. He's made lots and lots of money. I believe he's self-aware enough to know that he can't play anymore. I think they'll take a run at, I can't remember where I heard it. I'll give them full credit. They said that the strategic way to do it would be to go after Hellebuck. You get Hellebuck signed, and he's never been – he's always been super positive about playing here and living here
yeah,
and
he's been a
building who he was through the Jets organization. He's always been super positive. Shifley's been a bit of a malcontent, but if you get Hellebuck first, you can then say, you know, and then you trade away PLD. And that's part of it, I think, with Shifley, is that they're really making this push to make PLD. Every lineup change they make seems to be kind of catering to PLD. And I think once he goes and you have Hellebuck resigned, you can tell Shifley, the next 5 years are going to be built around you, all this, you know, PLD's gone. Well, you'll have you playing with Connor and Ehlers. And then we'll build underneath you and those types of things. I think that, you know, the short to medium term will be pretty good. I mean, you know, we have some good players in the minors, not great, but there's going to be a few of them that'll work their way into the lineup.
Yeah, NHL caliber anyway, for sure.
Yeah, and I think we have some good young defensemen, and yeah, I think other than the Wheeler thing you said, I could stomach what you described there.
Okay. Yeah. Again, and that's part of the mathematics to this is that, you know, obviously Wheeler's contract coming off the books opens up a bunch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those, again, I only look at historical outputs and performance. And if sort of now, you know, it'd be Connor, Ehlers, Morrissey, and Shifley as sort of your, and I hate to use this word again, core. Mm-hmm. And to me, the results haven't been to a point where I would say, yes, let's keep, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, I'm extremely confident that this group will keep us very competitive in a playoff spot year in and year out. Now, again, there's 32 teams. It's super competitive. You can have a great, like, Edmonton sucked for years, and they have the two best forwards in the entire NHL. So there's no right one math equation to go by. I have a bit of trepidation because, that's the way I ask the question. I think that's the most likely outcome is that we push hard to keep Shifley, and we push hard to keep Hellebuck, and then infuse the lineup, I think, with some of the draft picks that have been waiting in the wings.
Totally agree.
All right, well, I've spent all my questions, and we're getting over an hour. Did you have any?
Well, yeah, I hope it wasn't as ranty and as negative as you know, the Jets' social media is, but hopefully we'll be around in a couple weeks, and we'll still be able to do this. I think we're coming quickly towards the end of the season, and hopefully our next episode won't be a wrap-up episode. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.